Welcome to Off the Cuff with Aubrey Huff. With his co-host, The Hammer. The only show that's bringing you real locker room talk from the guys that play between the lines.
The Hammer and I coming from you, not live here in Chandler, Arizona. This episode's brought to you by Lumberland Bat Company. You know, Hammer, I always thought every time I went to the batter's box and every time I shattered a bat, they have to do something with these bats, right? You know, it just feels like such a waste. I'm living in California now, recyclable kind of guy. Want to recycle these bats. And now Lumberland Company has found the way to do just that. So they made a beer mug out of baseball bats. The mugs are completely sealed inside and out, perfectly holding your favorite 12-ounce beer. For those of you that don't want to have a little visual on YouTube right here, go on to my YouTube channel. You can see it right here.
Confirm that's only 12 ounces?
It's only 12 ounces. Okay. Boom. 12 ounces.
Sorry. Go ahead.
You can down it. These mugs are completely sealed inside and out, perfectly holding your favorite 12-ouncer. They're fully customizable. Each is on laser engraved and can be personalized with names, logos, favorite sport teams, and even your baby. Beautiful photographs. These bat mugs are a great gift for any special occasion. Get them for dad, coach, or anyone you know that has a drinking problem, Hammer.
Or needs to be refreshed in life.
The Lumberland Bat Mug is official product of MLB Players Association and has licensed designs available for every player and team. Head to www.lumberland.com and get 10% off your order with code OFFTHECUFF. That's www.lumberland.com and design your bat mug today. So,
I got to tell you, they're a good-looking mug.
They are. They are. I really like them.
We've seen a few today.
So, yeah, I got this one here. It's got Aubrey Huff off the cuff, and it's got me chewing my rally thong with my sunglasses on, completely Adderall out of my mind. Mm-hmm. Back in the day when we were doing the parade in San Francisco, I was 100 milligrams deep that day. Spoke in front of a million San Francisco Giants fans. And if you want to go on YouTube, ladies and gentlemen, search Aubrey Huff rally thong speech. Just watch. I did the whole Zoolander skit out there in front of a million people. And it's something I wouldn't have done.
Did you go teal?
It's what do you call that? It's not teal.
It's not teal. I like teal though.
No. If you've seen Zoolander, I did the whole Zoolander deal, right? Where he's going down the runway and he pulls the shit out of his pants.
Yeah. So yep.
I stuffed that rally thong around there. And I told the people of San Francisco, I got a special surprise just for you. And I did that whole dance that Ben Stiller did in that movie. The crowd went apeshit.
And you had your glasses on the whole time, so no
glasses
one could see
on.
Your pupils.
I think the only thing I was missing was pulling down a heater at that time, a Marlboro Menthol. I think I was really craving one. I tell you what, when I did that Adderall, buddy, there was nothing better than a Marlboro Menthol.
You know, I'm glad you found the way back, and I'm glad you're a straight and narrow guy now.
It was rough.
Hopefully an inspiration to listeners.
Well,
and
that's
struggles.
Funny. We kind of led off on this little thing here, and this is kind of opposite of what this show is going to be today.
Yeah.
So we got Jake Olson, ladies and gentlemen, coming on the show today. For those of you guys that don't know who Jake Olson is, he is a guy that went to college at USC. He was lost his eyesight when he was a young man, and he was one of the first guys to ever be a long snapper. And at USC, and he was blind. And so now Jake Olson is an inspiration to so many people. I mean, he goes out around, he's on a website called Let's Engage, which I'm on as well, where people go and public speak about some of their journeys in life. And for him, growing up, you know, he wasn't born blind.
No.
And he was a guy that had, what did he call it? Some kind of surgery.
He had cancer of the retina.
It's called retinoblastoma. And he had to have his eyes surgically removed. And I can only imagine, Hammer, what that would be like for anybody to be able to know what looking and seeing is like and then losing it. It's one thing to have it that way. And being born blind, you just don't know any better. So it'll be interesting to see how he's navigated that.
Yeah, and I mean, not to mention lose your eyesight, which would be unbelievable after you had it at some point. But also at that age, at 12, the pressure's coming in from school and kids. I mean, we have young kids and there's a lot of, I mean,
kids
bullying's
are
the bud word.
They're assholes.
But they're mean and they're assholes and kids don't understand. And as they get older, they think, you know, picking on kids is cool, which by the way, it's not. And you realize that if you've ever picked on a kid, I've picked on a kid before in my life, and I'm sure you have.
We used to throw a little nerdy kid in high school in the trash can upside down as a jocks.
But then you get older and you realize, I mean, everything, wisdom comes with age, as they say.
We were on the people that killed us, just like in Billy Madison.
We are definitely on someone's Billy Madison list. But as you have kids, right, you realize you probably, some things shouldn't be done, and, you know, it's probably was tough for him coming up.
Well, yeah, and what's great about this, I mean, you got a kid that has every excuse in the world coming up to have this excuses that I'm blind, I can't do this, I can't do that. This victim mentality, I think a lot of people let their disabilities, their handicaps, whatever it may be, kind of hold them back.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't grow up in a very rich family, so they use that excuse. Or, you know, I'm not as strong as everybody else. I don't have the means or the resources. Well, listen, guys, I mean, neither one of us did growing up.
Yeah.
You know, and you've turned out to be a hell of a guy, you know, great dude, very successful guy in your business, raising beautiful kids, awesome wife. You know, I went on to play Major League Baseball despite, you know, my life being kind of fucked up growing up.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I have my sight. We all have our different plights. But, you know, for me growing up, my father was murdered. A lot of people know this when I was 6 years old. And growing up in Texas, I could have said, you know what, don't have a father. I can use that excuse to just kind of play the victim card. And I used it as fuel for me. I used it as fuel to say, you know what, I'm going to take my loss and I'm going to be able to make it up to my mom who raised me all by herself and use that as adrenaline and fuel to wake me up every day and give myself some kind of goal. And baseball was that goal and I loved it. And, you know, I grew up in a trailer park. You know, my mom worked, you know, a Winn-Dixie shift, could barely put any food on the table. I ate Hamburger Helper almost daily, shit breakfast. I was a fat, chubby little kid growing up. I never had any dates. I had a really rough childhood.
Yeah.
Got picked on a lot because I wasn't playing football. And, you know, I was a nerd. I didn't go out and party. And so I was really kind of an outcast.
Yeah.
I had a lot of insecurities without having a father. Fear, doubt crept into my life. And I think that's really given me a lot of insecurities as an adult now, looking back at where I grew up.
Yeah. And you know, you said a great word, and this isn't to call you out on it, but you said disability, right? And I think a lot of people say disability and go, okay, you know, they've got one leg or one arm, or they can't see or they can't hear, and that's a disability, or, you know, whatever that might be. But really a disability, in my opinion, and I think in your opinion and anyone listening, this should be, I think, everyone's opinion, is anything you struggle with.
Right.
So if you've got an addiction, whatever those addiction may be, drugs, alcohol, could be porn, you've got an OCD disorder where you have. Well, I mean, I like the house clean. And that's a disability in some regards because it affects your thinking of your mind.
Yeah.
Regardless how you look at it. And you know, I just wanna throw it out there that, you know, a lot of people think disability, and we're not by any means saying he's got a disability because he's blind. He's got a challenge like everyone else. His challenge might be a bigger challenge than some things that we perceive as challenges.
Yeah.
But those are all disabilities in my opinion. And what's awesome about this story is to see a guy like this. I mean, you think there's a lot of amazing, amazing people that didn't look at it as a disability and looked at it as an opportunity.
Right.
Stevie Wonder, you know, Ray Charles.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of great, great people that are influencers and are positive. And go, you know what? It's not anything to me. It's just something that happened, and I got to get through it and past it. And I think if it's positive thinking, you know, we all listen to, and baseball is a sport, anything in life, visualization and positive thinking.
Yeah.
If your mind is in the right spot and you actually believe you can do it, there's a good chance that you will do or succeed at it.
Well,
maybe not instantly.
But I think you got to love it too.
You got to love it.
You got to love it. If you don't love it, it's like I think Steve Jobs said it best, right? He said, if you don't love it, then you might as well quit.
No.
You know, but
I've been watching your guy, Ed Mylett. You know, you did a show with him. And, you know, his big thing as I see these is just you got to be positive about it. You got to believe in it. And you got to act and succeed on it. And
what you touch on, too, is like with Ed Mylett. I remember talking to him before the show. He struggled mightily. This guy's worth over $500 million in his career. He was a baseball player, hurt his leg, wanted to play Major League Baseball, didn't happen for him, opened up his own business. Now he's opening up other people's business as a consultant. Over $500 million, speaking all over the country. Yeah. He's making like $100,000 for an hour to speak. And that's how motivating he is. And he told me, growing up as a young man, he struggled with massive anxiety, depression. And to this day, he says he still has some problems with that. We'll have him on the show. He said he'll do the show, and we'll talk to him about it. But, you know, a lot of his things was fear. And fear. And I'm like, my gosh, you know, Ed, I struggled the same way. And I was very vulnerable on his show. And he got a lot of positive feedback for that show I did with him. And my story with fear, man, I mean, I remember going to college with you, right?
Yeah.
And I'm this insufferable, diehard mama's boy from Texas coming to Miami. And I'm scared to death and don't know how to navigate Miami. And it's just a culture I wasn't used to. I'd never been away from home. And when I got there, I was just got picked on by all you guys. Even you were an asshole at first, right?
Well, you were a weak prey.
I was.
You were a little minnow and piranhas were on you.
Yeah, you had 25 guys circling up during stretch. I was target number one. Hey, Aubrey Huff, virginity update. What's up? Did you get laid last night? And I'm like, no.
And again, we're not condoning that. We are Christian. We are God people. And hey, everyone's got their own path.
Yeah.
But yes.
But back then, we really weren't living that life.
You were easy prey.
And, you know, I'd show up with my cowboy hat, boots. You guys would like burn my shit, threw it out the trash.
We threw your stuff
down the trash chute. Oh, my God. I mean, you know, I'm this guy driving a Chevrolet 88 extended cab pickup in Miami. I was a fish out of water.
You were.
Let's just say that.
And so was I. We were all fish, a lot of us.
Dude, I mean, my fear was I won't be good enough to be here. I'll never fit in. And I remember, you remember this? About a month later, I've had it. I haven't even given the season a start yet. I'm ready to leave school. I called my mom up and I said, Mom, I'm leaving. You got to come get me.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, tried to talk me out of it. She told me, you'll always wonder what if. And I'm like, I don't care. Come get me. She comes over the next night. We're packing up in my apartment. She wants to help me drive home. And it just so happened that night I'm staying with two seniors. And they have a formal going out, dance, whatever.
Yeah.
And the alpha male of the team, I won't say his name.
Yep.
Pops in, knocks on the front door. I hear him come through the door. I'm like, oh, shit. This guy gave me more shit than anybody. He's the most confident guy we have ever met.
Yep.
And if he finds out my story right now that I'm about to pack up and leave, my life's
over. You're done. You're done.
All of a sudden, I hear in my bathroom next to my room, the shower go on. I'm like, what the fuck? Who's in my bathroom? And so I get a knock on my door about 5 minutes later. I'm like, oh, shit. I go open the door, and who is it? It's the alpha male of the team. He's sitting there completely dripping naked, buck wet with a six-pack in his hand,
yeah,
with one beer open, drinking. It looks into my room, sees my mom sitting at the end of my bed, and he's like, huh, who's the fucking broad? A little old for you, huh?
Okay.
He didn't even phase. Didn't phase him.
No.
Dick hanging out till deal. I'm like, what?
Walks right over to get. Right,
and I'm like, what? I'm from Texas. A kid from Texas. This is insulting. Right in front of my mom. I slam the door. I lock it. And I looked at my mom and I go, see, Mom, look what I have to deal with here. Like a little bitch. I was just like a little bitch. Scared to death to be there. Didn't know how to be a man. Didn't know how to engage with people. And I was in my little bubble my whole life. I didn't realize how big the world was.
Yeah.
And so when that door closed and I looked at her dead in the eye, and she looked at me dead in the eye, she starts laughing. She goes, you know, Aubrey, for a guy that big, you think he'd be a little bit more endowed.
Yeah.
She started dying laughing. I started dying laughing, and it was in that moment I go, you know what? Fuck. If my mom, who's a redneck woman from Texas, can laugh at something like
over
that,
it.
Then why can't I? And what happened after that, Hammer?
You finally got some confidence back.
You got into the stretch.
You started firing back at people. You started believing in yourself.
I stopped taking shit, and I started being more confident myself. I mean, such a scared little bitch.
I mean, and that was before, you know, that was after one of our first, I think, games. Remember when you were having some self-confidence problems at the plate, too?
And was this in Hawaii?
Yeah, and big guy had come over, and big guy walks up to you after. I mean, you took some swings one day in the game, and
everyone
in the dugout looked at each other and said, holy shit.
If I remember correctly, this was one of our first opening weekends. My sophomore year, my first year there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a backup to first-team All-American Rick Sagisi at the time.
And he was a big guy.
He could rake. Beautiful first. I mean, could play unbelievable defense at first. I was at Miami basically a backup at the time.
Yep.
You know, I had some talent, but I didn't necessarily think I was going to be a starter.
No, but this day you didn't have talent.
I got to tell this story. But this was in Hawaii, though. He gets hurt.
He gets hurt. Here's Huff. He gets a number called on the bench, and you know, his number gets called, and you could see deer in headlights. He's like, oh, shit. I got to come in the game. I think it was nationally televised that weekend. And so, you know, his first couple at-bats.
I was 1-for-16 that series.
He swung at a few balls over his head to finally make it look like he didn't belong.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be at our school.
Yeah. And then Turtle.
Turtle, big guy, comes over after his last strikeout.
He's our hitting coach in Miami.
And all the guys on the bench, we're laughing at him. We're like, holy shit, did you see those swings? I mean, literally laughing at him. Didn't do well for his self-confidence. And big guy comes over and finally says, hey, big guy, you can only lead a horse to the trough so many times before he's got to learn how to drink on his own. Yeah. You better figure it out.
Only had three fucking games.
Three games under his belt, and he was almost done.
But after that, I raked.
Yeah, after that, I got confidence.
I never stopped. And, you know, it's funny you bring that story up, too. I remember my first big league at bat. And for those of you guys out there, I always wonder how these guys go up their first major league pitch and hit a home run. It fucking baffles me. I couldn't even swing, Hammer.
Yeah.
I was facing the Indians, and Paul Shuey was the pitcher at the time. average white righty, throwing about 90 miles an hour right down the dick.
Yep.
And I step in the plate at the Trop. I was a Tampa Bay Ray at the time, and my 4,000 people, wasn't even a big crowd. My legs are shaking. I'm hitting 7-hole that day. I dig in. My name's called. My legs are shaking. I look at it, Paul Shuey. He throws me a first pitch. I'm like, how am I going to swing? My body's jelly. You could see my bat shaking. I was petrified. I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't swing if I tried. Next pitch, had every intention of swinging. Boom, fastball right down the middle. 0-2. I couldn't swing. And so I needed something.
You were frozen.
I needed, I'm like, I'm never going to make it. Doubt, fear, insecurity, all these things just come flooding my mind my first major league at bat. And I remember looking, I need something to calm me down. I stepped out and I looked behind me in the stands where my mom, sister, grandma, and grandpa, God rest their soul, who were up there and watched me grind my whole life. And they were smiling and waving at me. Instantly in that moment, I'm like, oh, fuck, this ain't real life.
Yeah.
This is baseball, right? Went in there and I hit the fucking shit out of the next pitch, line drive right to the second baseman. I got out, but at least I knew I could hit the ball hard off a major league pitcher.
Yep.
And I was on my way.
So you're on your way to confidence.
Yeah.
And an inspiration as you've gotten older with your battles of things, inspiration hopefully to others. And I think what's important about this guy or any guys that battles, you know, different things on a different level, but still confidence and the ability to believe in yourself and go, you know what? I'm not going to let a hurdle per se slow me down. I'm going to take that as a challenge. Challenge fucking accepted. Yeah. And how do we get past it? And how do we inspire people? And the great thing, I think he's a motivational speaker, as you said.
Yeah.
I think the lives he's going to change and is already changed.
Yeah. And I think confidence and what I've really learned, confidence came natural to us when we played baseball.
Yeah.
We were doing something that was very rare. A lot of people don't get to do. So you have this natural confidence comes about. You're like, I'm doing something so badass nobody else can do.
Yeah.
And then when you get in the real world, you're no longer doing that. And you're like, ooh, where does that confidence come from now? So you're replacing your confidence in what you do and not in who you are.
That's right.
I think so. A lot of people do. And confidence to me is a choice. No matter what you're doing, you could be working as a fucking plumber, which is nothing wrong with that. Truck driver, nothing wrong with that.
No.
You're not making a hell of a lot of money, but if you're doing anything, it's all about confidence. It is a choice. I don't care what it is you do. And I've learned that the hard way.
Well, I could tell you, I mean, you know, I had two jobs coming out of the game, right? Yeah. You get a family and the confidence and you've got to have it. You got to support a family. A lot of pressures come into life.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there through them all with me.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be confident working at a restaurant bar, great restaurant. I'm not going to label it as, you know, but a different lifestyle place. And when you're a guy that has been not open to that, it's different. But when you tell people, hey, where are you working? People give you that look. Hey, you got to be confident.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I got to do. I got a family support. It's okay.
And that's why you're such a good salesman, because you're confident. You're right. You tell me all the time. You know,
they're buying you, not
the products.
Yeah, but you got to be confident in yourself and in anything. You don't go anywhere. You don't purchase anything. You don't put your trust in anybody. You're not going to do that unless somebody is letting you know, I know what I'm doing. Believe in me. I will get us there. And I'm not going to fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest thing is always, and you know, I'm paranoid as hell. People in the world are always looking to fuck people.
Yeah.
And it blows me away.
Yeah.
And remember this, listeners, what you have is your word. Never give up your word. Never screw people. Once you do that, your name means shit.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and that was a little off topic, right? But I think that is a big thing in life. People forget their names. That's all you got.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start fucking people over or treating them bad, or there's a lot, you can't get it back.
Yeah, I mean, that happened to me. So since I got out of baseball, I've had a hard time letting people in my life, because that's all they want is connections, money, opportunity, you know, and, you know, I get used so much from that shit. So I have this little bubble of people that I'm still trying to work on to be able to go outside of that and start trusting people again, because that's a big thing.
It is.
You know, when you get out of baseball, get out of any kind of, if you're successful in anything, you go out in the real world and you retire, then the whole world's out for you, because they're looking for your resources, your connections.
Yep.
You know, asking for your, they know this guy's got some money. It happens to me almost weekly.
Even if you're just a good person, it might not have shit.
Right.
People that aren't good people are just going to try to suck you dry to make you a bad person with them. And that's influences life. Kids, you're going to hang around with kids that are bad influences. And they want to bring you down with them.
Yeah.
Guess what? If what's the saying again? If you walk like a duck, act like a duck, talk like a duck,
you're probably a duck.
You're a duck.
Yeah.
So, and then if you're a kid and you want to be in the cool crowd and those kids are doing dumb shit that are going to get you in trouble, take a second and realize you don't need to be cool.
Yeah.
And don't let bad people bring you down. It's, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way I was in high school. I wanted to be so liked by everybody. And you know what I really realized? I haven't talked to any of my high school friends in 15 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You think you're so important back then and your yeah. whole life revolves around your girlfriend in high school or all your friends.
Yeah.
You guys that are listening to this high school, you won't, that person that you think you're your best friend in high school, you will never talk to them again in five yeah. years. Probably most likely.
Most likely. Now, and you know me, I got some really
you,
good.
You do.
My good,
you do.
I got a solid group that are
yeah,
still.
Still. It's very rare yeah, though.
It's
very
rare.
Because you're is. Just such a rare breed.
No, they would laugh and say yeah. they are too. But
you're a special creature.
We were all special. But I think youth sports for us brought that camaraderie at an yeah. early age, and we've yeah. talked about it on past shows that, you know, when you get that bond and you're in the trenches together, you build a certain kind of bond. I mean, in Miami, the guys we could call them, any of them, and I was fortunate to have those high school friends that we were around each other a lot and. We all got along, and we never screwed each other. We always had our backs, and to this day, yeah. I got a solid group of buddies that, again, I'd call them yeah. right now, and they'd be here tomorrow if they needed
to. Well, that's interesting. You talk about camaraderie in the locker room, right? Yeah. I mean, we're big on that, and, you know, Jake Olson, you know, being at USC,
yeah.
you know, he's been in those locker rooms, right? And he was a guy that was blind in the locker room. I want to ask him. Let's get him on the show now. We'll
yeah.
talk to him about – I want that first question. Ask him yep. what it was like in his clubhouse, being blind. What was the camaraderie like, and do you miss it? So – guys, I want to welcome on Jake Olson. He was born with, how do you say this, Hammer? It's retinoblastoma. Does that sound right? Retinoblastoma. It's a cancer of the retina. Yeah. And he had to have it surgically removed in his younger years. He made his first career appearance when he was made the snap for USC. And now he's a motivational speaker and a very inspirational person to many all over the world. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Jake Olson. All right, Jake, hey, man, I know you're a busy guy. You're out there changing lives all over the world, so thanks for taking the time out to be on our show here, Off the Cuff with Aubrey. I appreciate it, buddy.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so, you know, me and the Hammer just, we were sitting there talking about, because, you know, the Hammer and I, we played college baseball together. I played 13 years in the big leagues, and we were talking a lot about camaraderie and what it's like and how much that means in the clubhouse and how much you miss it. A, you being at USC for those years with Pete Carroll, what was the clubhouse like, and do you miss that camaraderie of the guys?
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, like, you know, I'm a big golfer, and it's kind of, you know, my main sport, but football was definitely my second favorite sport, if not, you know, tied with my first, just probably my first watching, just, you know, tied second playing. But part of that reason was just because of the camaraderie. I mean, you know, obviously with golf, you don't get nearly this.
You're right. Solo, you're solo. Yeah, you're caddy.
You know, yeah, no. So, like, for me to be kind of with a team, and, you know, that's one of the reasons I fell in love with football, and obviously kind of had my first experience of just a complete football team when I was 12 with the Trojans. And so that kind of just reassured how much I loved the camaraderie in the sport. And then eventually, when I was in high school wanting to get back into playing football, I mean, that was the main reason. I remember having friends on the team who, you know, I wasn't on the team yet, but having friends who were, and, you know, they, you know how it goes. You make inside coaches or inside jokes about coaches, you know, mocking their voices, what they say, like just all of it, all of that that goes on. And I just remember kind of sitting there and just thinking, like, man, I really miss this. So that, honestly, that was one of the main drive why I wanted to get back into playing football.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And, you know, again, you know, me and Huffy were sitting here talking about your story, and I got to tell you, it's inspirational for a lot of reasons. You know, as we were talking, we were saying, you know, it's got to be tough. You know, Huffy threw out, you know, it's got to be tough in a disability. And I immediately, as we listen to that, say, disability, I you know, how do you think of disability? Only because anything in life's a disability, right? Whether you got a drinking problem, you got OCD, you know, you can't see, you've got too many girlfriends. There's a lot of things that are considered disabilities, right? And I don't think that's the right word. And again, the inspiration, what do you define, you know, as you say disability? I mean, I don't think it's really a disability. You just said you golf and you love it. And that's interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think one of the cool things you're seeing, especially, is technology continues to support a lot of these people, and, you know, that people around them kind of continue to see just their abilities different. And that, you know, I always say, if there's a will, there's a way. And a lot of times when you deal with people who have a different way of living, if they can't see or they can't walk, but you see them doing their sports or their passions differently, but you know, very, very, you know, they're still very competitive and, you know, doing it in their way. It's just being able to understand, like, it just takes a different way sometimes, you know? And it's like, yeah, for me, it's not playing, the star quarterback or, you know, star tight end or whatever, but doesn't mean I can't play football or, you know, I can't go and just play a round of golf by myself. It doesn't mean I can't go out there and play golf. So, I mean, like, it just is kind of changing a little bit of the way you think about the person playing and how they play. And then once you kind of get your mind around that, then you figure out a way they can play. And then all of a sudden, you know, everyone's having a blast doing it.
So, I mean, I've already gotten the first 3 minutes we've been talking. You're a confident guy, which is great to hear, because confidence, I think, in life in general is something you got to have to be a success for yourself and to push forward. At what point in your age, and maybe it was the whole time, did you go, you know what, this isn't going to stop me from doing what I'm doing, and you know what, I'm going to use it as a catalyst to motivate people and let them know, no matter what the issue is or what you think you have going on, you can always do something with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up, just having to fight, you know, taught me at an early age. I mean, I don't know. I think obviously probably my personality was always to be kind of stubborn and a fighter, but I mean, I definitely was put into training pretty early on. So when I did finally hit that battle of losing my sight, you know, I was trained, and I just kind of kept that same mentality of cancer wasn't going to stop me. I guess now blindness isn't either. So of course it came with hard times, but I just remember thinking to myself that obviously the situation isn't perfect and it's something I would have never wanted, but it is a situation and there's nothing that I can really do about that or anyone can do about that. And so the only thing that's still left in my control is just how I'm going to live the rest of my life. You know, I was 12, so it's like 80 plus years, hopefully, of living still. And that's, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that accounts all the whiskey I drink, but I'm just going to say 80 plus years. But, I wanted to continue to do the things I loved and play the sports I loved, hang out with my friends, still play video games, you know, just like be a normal kid. And so I just found a way of doing that. And for me, that's what satisfied me at the end of the day. You know, I think it's harder because there's more frustrations that come with trying to achieve your goals still and your dreams and live that life. But I think beyond the frustration and sometimes those hard times, and it's completely worth it at the end of the day, other than the other avenue, which would be just to sit home and feel sorry for yourself, which again might not be with the same frustrations, but no one's ever satisfied at the end of the day doing that.
Yeah, 1000%, man. And you know your story is so unique, you know, and you know, we're talking about excuses and things like that before you came on, and you know, you had every opportunity to use excuses. I grew up in a rough childhood. You know, my father was murdered when I was 6. I had every excuse not to make a life for myself, you know. And You obviously lost your sight at 12 years old, and you know, I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, that I've read articles where people say, you know, when they were born blind, they don't know any better. But when you've had sight before and then you lose it, you had every excuse to just want to just roll over and die, and you didn't. So how did you navigate through that really tough transition? I had to go through a season where you're really, really down and out.
I mean, I think the worst part of it all was, you know, the month and a half of knowing I was going to lose my sight to the surgery of when I did lose my sight. Cause I mean, that was just kind of, it was kind of real torture. It was tormenting my psyche and knowing what was to come and trying to just grasp every moment of living with the sight I had left. And so, and then also you have the uncertainty of what, you know, is yet to come. But then once I kind of had that surgery, I mean, it wasn't 24 hours that went by that I kind of didn't get back up and kind of think to myself like, hey, this is it. It's official now. I surgery happened and it's going to be my life. So, I mean, I kind of have to, you know, the doctors told my parents I'd probably have to get, you know, some help and get maybe with a psychiatrist or something like that. But I never did. I just really wanted to get back to just living a normal life and finding a way. And, you know, for me, that was the easiest thing to do because, of course, it just was what I had to do. I mean, it's amazing how your body adapts you know, your surroundings. And so the fact I couldn't see anymore, my body started adapting right away and learning how to just get around. My coach has a great saying about excuses, and he says all excuses are is just a way you cheapen yourself. I mean, it's really is just a way you cheapen yourself. You know, when you tell yourself you're not good enough or you can't do something, that, I mean, that's all you're doing is cheapening your worth as a golfer, as a human, as a husband, as whatever. I mean, whatever the case is. And so for me, like, that's how I always evaluate excuses too. Like, why would I tell myself, like, I can't go play this game because I'm blind? Because I know inside myself I still can. I'm still an athlete. I still am an able mind. I have every ounce in me to understand the game, to comprehend the techniques to perform. Like, I don't see why I should cheapen myself then and say I can't play this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's why. I mean, for me, excuses are like elbows, right? Everybody has them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's, and to me, you know, my faith is what got me going. Whenever I was going through a real tough time out of baseball, transitioning out of the game of baseball, went through a series of depression, anxiety. I was suicidal at a time, Jake, and, you know, had a gun to my head at one point. And my faith is what really got me under control. And I think without it, I probably would have eventually pulled that trigger and ended it all. So for you, you know, you lost, you know, your sight at 12 completely. And, you know, your faith, I don't know when you were a Christian guy, but how much has your faith influenced you in your journey?
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. I mean, I remember I, you know, I grew up non-denominational. So, you know, I had the choice whenever to get baptized when I wanted to. And I remember I got, you know, it was like 6 years old and I wanted to get baptized. And, you know, remember my pastor made me do a bunch of like booklets just because you just want to make sure I understood, you know, what that actually meant and the significance behind it. But I did it because, I mean, I realized at an early age that, I mean, there was things that go on in this world where it is very tough and unfair, and the strength, and I believe the strength, the courage, and the hope you need to get through those things, you can't find here on earth. And so I realized that at an early age, so that's, you know, that's where kind of my real, you know, relationship started with Christ. And it was just something that I trusted through it all. He would make it into something that's, you know, prosperous and good, even if it wasn't necessarily what I wanted. He has. I mean, I remember saying after I snapped for the first time that, I mean, if you can't see how God works things out, I think you're the blind one. And I stick to that. I mean, I think that, you know, take me, for example, or the millions of other cases out there where people have gone through very tough times and they've continued to trust that God has a plan for them and remain faithful in it. And even, again, even if it's not something they necessarily wanted or asked for, but through that, they've been blessed in ways and blessed others in ways that they would never even thought.
You know what? You know, I think it's important to say this again because you said it, and I remember seeing this as well, and I want the listeners to really let this sink in. And, you know, if you can't see, is how you said, how God works things out, then I think you're the blind one. That to me is unbelievable, man. And, you know, just watching your journey of how you've been able to navigate life. And I want to go back to your days with Pete Carroll, you know, at USC. Take us through how that all planned out for you to be the snapper there. How'd that story play out? And the listeners got to hear this.
Well, I mean, I grew up a huge Trojan fan. And so my dad and I always, obviously we go to the games just as normal fans and things. And eventually when I was 12 going through what I was going through and that losing my eyesight, that my situation reached the athletic department, Coach Carroll up there, and just, you know, he was this Trojan fan, this huge Trojan fan, this little boy who's going through a very hard time. And I think Coach Carroll just said, all right, let's bring him up. You know, he did that and much more. I mean, I remember going for the first time to a practice, and for all intents and purposes, I thought it was just going to be a practice. I mean, standing on the sideline watching practice, which was more than I could have ever asked for, but to my surprise, it was even more than that, and that was just introducing me to the team, having me in pre-meeting or pre-practice meetings, and literally the line meetings, and involved in practice, eating dinner with the players after practice, and then, I mean, that was just the first day. Then, you know, obviously I went to the South Bend, was able to hang out with the team, go through walkthroughs, you know, be in the bus, you know, at home games. I stayed in one Friday night, staying in the team hotel with them. And like, it was such a special part. You know, it wasn't something that he was ever asked to do or did for any other reason than just, he saw me, he loved me, he loved my family, and just wanted to make that a special experience. And it wasn't just one day again, it was that entire season. And I think that's what's just something that is very rare. I mean, you see all the time kids kind of get this one day Make-A-Wish kind of experience, and it's awesome. I mean, don't get me wrong, but what I think made my experience even more special is that I kept in touch with Carol, with the players. They put their arms around me. They constantly were calling me. You know, they just wanted to make sure in every way possible they were supporting me and were like my older brother. And I did become like their younger brother. And so that's how I got into SC and became kind of part of that Trojan family. And then eventually, obviously, when I was in high school, I picked up long snapping. And then always wanted to go to USC. I mean, even before my Carol experience, but definitely had to after that. But never actually, I knew I was going to be part of the program to some extent, just because, you know, I had that relationship. I didn't know if I was, you know, it's going to be kind of being around the players or at practice sometimes. But I remember I was up at a practice my senior year of high school up at SC, and Coach Stark was there, and he said, hey, you know, because Stark came to a couple of our high school games just for recruiting purposes for some other guys and stuff. And he obviously had seen me snap, and he's just like, hey, you know, I snap. When you're coming here, did you ever think, you know, wanting to come and play on the football team? Like, not really, but that opportunity's open. I mean, count me in. So he said, yeah, no, get in, and we can definitely talk about it. And eventually that came to fruition. I got in, and Coach Stark said, you know, Jake's going to be on the football team and go snap for us, and there'll be, you know, definitely a day where he comes and snaps in the Coliseum. And fortunately, I got a couple of those days, and it was just an awesome, awesome experience.
That is awesome. And, you know, you're talking about USC, and Jake, I got to tell you, you know, playing college baseball, being in the locker room a lot, the camaraderie, the honesty, I'll repeat that, mm-hmm. the honesty guys have with each other. The teammates and buddies that are listening that know me, they would be going, if you don't ask this fucking question, Russ, I lose all respect for you. And I know you're probably thinking, oh, shit, what's he going to ask me? But my question, and I'm sure you got asked in the locker room, is, I mean, are you married today?
Am I what?
Are you married today? Are you married?
No, I'm not married.
Girlfriend, but do you have a girlfriend?
I do have a girlfriend, yes.
Okay, fair enough. But what is the selection process?
Yeah.
As you're meeting a woman, and how do you know? I mean, I've watched the movie Ray, right? And he had his way that, you know, he'd shake hands.
A sin of a woman, he touches the face, right?
You know, a sin of a woman, he touches the face. You got it. You got to let us know and the listeners know. And this is a lighthearted side, which is what I love. You can laugh and joke about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, look, like voices do say a lot. However, they're not perfect. Like, for the most part, like, you can really kind of tell, at least, like, it's like at least a knock on the door. Like, okay, hey, that girl sounds cute. However, I'll tell you one thing. If a girl does not sound cute, and she is cute, but her voice does not sound cute, man, like, you could probably count me out. Like, I don't know. It's what I hear all the time. Like, if her voice doesn't, like, portray, like, in my mind what, like, you know, what I think is a cute girl, then I even if she, again, is cute, I just don't know if I can do it. But anyway, so that's kind of the first.
So it starts with the voice.
Yeah.
Starts with the voice.
Okay.
Then obviously you just, you know, you do your due diligence with your buddies and, you know, ask the important questions, right? But. Yeah.
Which, like, could go bad if your buddies are playing a joke on you, right? That could go bad quick.
It could. However, like, the shoulder. So I know. I think it was in that movie you guys were talking about. I think he like would grab the wrist, right?
Ray would grab the wrist, yeah, and he'd start feeling a little bit up the arm, right?
yeah. Which the wrist does tell a lot. However, I think the shoulder. I think. Which I hang on to anyways for people to guide me. I think that tells more than anything. The shoulder tells a lot. So I always would kind of judge it on the shoulder as well.
Okay.
Shit, man. I got to tell you, Jake, I've been single now for 2 years. And in this dating world today, I got to tell you, there's times I wish I was fucking blind. I mean, oh boy, I got to tell you, man, I'm sorry. That was so bad.
So the shoulder.
No, look, I mean, I definitely, at the end of the day, man, as long as the body's rocking, I can overlook a lot of things, you know?
Love
it. So the voice and shoulder, those are, So even when we can see, close our eyes, and I'm listening. Well,
we're
I'm
in a,
married,
we're
so
in a hashtag, hashtag Me Too movement too. Do you get a free pass if you even go a little lower?
No, I don't try to flirt with the line. That's for sure. But I mean, there's definitely times where you, as a blind guy, you accidentally reach for a shoulder and maybe you touch something else sometimes, and it's completely by accident. But I definitely think, you know, by that standard, yeah, you'd be hard pressed to find someone who would, I guess, be a jerk enough to say that's intentional.
Yeah. That could get ugly.
Oh, boy.
And you said you like to drink whiskey earlier. So, yeah. I mean, is that a prerequisite that women have to be able to drink whiskey?
Man, I would love to say yes, but it's such a rarity. You have to kind of cut your losses.
Yeah. So I don't want to take away, but I mean, again, I had to ask that question. And but moving forward, I mean, you speak a lot, and we've gone to the motivational speaking.
Well, for me, me and you, that's how we connected. We're on this website called Let's Engage, right? And you do a lot of motivational speaking. You've done a lot of different things in that avenue. I'm starting to try to launch out in that world as well. So when you go out and speak to people, what do you usually consist your topics on? It depends on the people you're talking to.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, it can be tailored, and you know, I'll kind of personalize it depending on who I'm talking to. But for the most part, it's just overcoming adversity. You know, what I've used in my life to overcome adversity, how I see things. You know, things we talked about today, just, you know, self-confidence, believing in yourself. You know, knowing, I call it the winner within, you know, understanding of, kind of talked about, you know, from more of a faith aspect, but just that there's setups and your setbacks, and, you know, a couple other things as well. Just, again, telling people my story, giving them the advice that I've taken a life, the advice I want to give them, and just understanding that at the end of the day, I mean, I'm, again, just a normal person like they are. And if I could do it, they can as well.
Well, Jake, yeah, but before we let you go, man, I got to ask this. We're both in this Engage thing. I have yet to get one speaking gig at all for these. Have you gotten any one speaking gig yet?
I definitely do. I mean, for the most part, I mean, what we've kind of created Engage for, which is cool, is just to kind of centralize the process and digitize the process of when someone contacts you. So we definitely are getting after with you, Aubrey, and I think we definitely want to get stuff your way. But for the most part, I mean, people just kind of contact me, and what I do is just when they do, I just say, hey, submit your request through Engage, and then that kind of just makes the whole process a lot easier.
Jake, that was real kind of you. I mean, but you got to see the layup he just gave you right there.
He put it on a tee
so bad.
I know what you're going to do. He said,
you know, I haven't got really anything through this. Are you? And you subtly said, yeah, basically, I'm fucking slammed, Huffy, and you don't get shit. You know why? Because you're not motivational, and you got bitch hips.
And they probably follow my Twitter account.
And you're an asshole on Twitter. So yeah, Jay, you can fire him. It's okay.
What we've learned is there is literally a niche for every single thing out there. That weird associations and organizations that look for speakers all the time. So Aubrey, I promise you, no matter how weird you get, there's definitely something out there for you.
Oh, he's giving confidence. I love it.
I love it. That's why he's good. If there's a place out there that's going to book professional assholes, I could probably get on that.
But you got a good heart.
I literally probably could find you something like that in the next 10 minutes. It's like the weirdest thing. I think we found one time like a national organization of like upholstery, like something like, it's just like, it's the weirdest stuff out there.
Huh. Yeah. So I one more thing, and this is my last thing, and then Huffy can end it with you, and we don't want to keep you too long. You're a busy man, we know. But I was just with a friend over the weekend, a USC grad. What would be the one sentence chant line you would give at USC at a game?
What do you mean chant line?
Like, you know, in Miami, it's go Canes go, or, you know, we've got the FU Seminoles,
right?
That might
be the dumbest question I've ever heard.
I was with someone from USC this week.
Our mantra's
come on.
Fight on. I mean, that's usually what
fight
people
on?
Would say.
Oh, but, that's why you guys can't win games.
That's an entirely different podcast. But
don't worry, we got busted for the same infractions.
That's right. Oh, shit. The U, baby, the U. U. Oh gosh.
If hey, look, if college football wanted to adopt what SC and the U do on a yearly basis, we'd all have a lot more fun.
We would, man.
Yeah, well, Jake, thanks, man, for coming on the show. This has been a blast. I got to tell you, this is our like 17th episode now, Hammer.
Yeah, and it is.
We've had more fun today with you than anybody. We've had some pretty good guests on.
I appreciate that. I think it's just the fact that I avoided hitting the fastballs that you're throwing me.
Yeah, yo, actually, I was putting it on the tee.
Hanging breaking
there
balls.
There was nothing moving hard for you. next podcast, we'll have you on. You can really go for it then.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, like, again, I just wanted to kind of set the stage a little bit, make you guys a little more comfortable, and then that's the real attack mode then, because then you're comfortable and then you don't expect it, you know?
That's right.
Hey, so where can everyone find you on Twitter and online, and where can they book you on the motivational things, just so everybody knows at home?
I'm Jake Olson 61 is you know, kind of my two handles, and then you can go my bio on my social media, it's in there, but for the most part you can contact me in any way you want, but I'll send you to Let's Engage, and just you can send a request, and for whatever you want to do, it's speech, you want to play a round of golf with me, if you want to go surfing with me, whatever you want to do, it's customizable. So absolutely, if you want to get a hold of me, then you can go to letsengage.com.
Awesome.
Perfect. If you ever get out to AZ, we'll have a whiskey. I'm an older gentleman than you, most likely, but
and
still
play a little golf
for sure.
I would love to.
All right, Jake, thanks, buddy.
All right, guys,
have a good day.
See ya.
Yeah, Hammer, I think since you're such an avid golfer, I would put my money on the blind guy.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing, though?
I think it's awesome.
Not only is he a long snapper, which I think over time, it's just a feel because you're in the same yardage every time, right? It's just a feel, right? But when you play golf, you got different holes, par threes, par fives, par fours. How do you know where the fuck you're going to hit it?
Well,
how far you're going to – there's hazards, there's water, there's sand. That's unbelievable. Do you have a guy there?
Well, he made a great point.
Talks?
He's got a caddy. Yeah. And swing pass, swing memory, all things that you can learn, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guaranteed – the best golfers out there can close their eyes and still hit the driver.
Right.
And they know which way they're hitting it as long as they get lined up. So I would assume the caddy lines them up.
Yeah.
And his swing path and everything is good. He's going to hit it where he wants.
Well, that's what's great, man. And here's a guy that has every excuse, like we said, to fucking just be pissed off of the world. He's out living life, surfing, he says.
Yes.
And I know there's a guy out there.
There's a lot of sharks out there.
There's people out there listening to this right now that's sitting on the couch that's probably not happy with where they are in life. There's some kind of excuse holding them back.
Yeah.
They're drinking a beer, they're drinking a whiskey, maybe way too many, eating a bag of Cheetos, wondering how the fuck they're going on with their life and how they're going to do it.
Yep.
I hope that this inspires people because, man, life's way too short to live in a fucking dark place. I've been there.
It is. Way too short.
And this guy literally lives in a dark place every fucking day of his life. And here he is out there living his life and inspiring other people to do so.
Well, that's the beauty. It's not a dark place for him.
No.
Some people may think it is, but it's a great place. He's happy. He's energetic. He's having fun. Shit, the banter. I can hang out with that guy and have a drink.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 1,000%. Got good banter going.
He does. Well, fuck, he was in a
he's
clubhouse.
He's confident, yeah.
If you've lived in a clubhouse in any capacity, and, you know, if you don't make it, if you're there at least a year in a major league clubhouse, NFL clubhouse, wherever, any kind
minor
of
sport, leagues, any sporting clubhouse,
you tend to get thick-skinned.
Yeah.
And you tend to get life a little bit more. And my biggest thing with sports is, you know, for kids, play sports as long as you can, because sports are the greatest motivator, the greatest learning lessons for regular life.
Play band, be in theater, anything. Doesn't matter. Just be a part of a team sport in general.
Yep. That was a great episode, man. I hope you guys got a lot out of that. Typically, our episodes, Hammer, are pretty, you know, raw, degenerate, not very helpful, I would say, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's things that are in there.
We typically keep it loose, a lot funny on a drive,
we do care.
A lonely two-hour drive on a work day. But today, you know, we wanted to get a little bit more motivating, a little bit more helpful, and I hope that helps so many people out there. And we love you all, you guys. That's why we do what we do. And Huff and Hammer out.
Out.